Today on You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. It's a film club holiday edition, and I'm joined by my good friend Nick Roseman to talk about my favorite film of all time, It's a Wonderful Life.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find it.
So hello, everybody, and welcome to You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. Welcome. It's a film club edition, and it's a holiday edition of a film club edition. And I was joined by my friend Nick Roseman to talk about It's a Wonderful Life, one of my favorite films, if not my favorite film of all time. Certainly top Christmas movie, I think, but just as a film, I think it's wonderful. Now, Nick is a longtime friend from stand-up comedy. We lift drivers together, did a lot of things together with Nick, played magic, not lots of things. Once you played magic with somebody, you have a bond for life, I believe. And when I put the shout out saying, hey, favorite holiday films, Nick said It's a Wonderful Life. And I'm like, I gotta grab him. So, this 1946 classic, I get into it. We discuss it fully in here. So if you haven't seen it yet, I always suggest for Film Club, that might be one where you go watch it first because it is full of spoilers. And then you can share in it, share in the discussion in your head. Like, imagine this is a book club, but better because it's films, right? So do that if you would like. In the meantime, if you could hit the subscribe button if you like the video, or leave a comment, even better, or share with your friends. Or, hey, suggest a movie that you would like to discuss on Film Club. So, you know, reach out to me if you know how to get, if you know, you know. Okay. But yeah, here we are. Holiday edition, Film Club. It's a Wonderful Life.
Look, who are you?
I told you, George, I'm your guardian angel.
What is it you want, Barry? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
Welcome home, Mr. Bailey.
Sentimental hogwash.
I wish I had $1 million. Hot dog! Mr. and Mrs. Martini, welcome home.
This is what I wished for.
You see, George, you really had a wonderful life.
Nick Roseman, is almost like we just discussed it seconds ago. Hey, it was, I don't know, serendipity? I don't know if it's the right word for this, but when I put a call out saying, hey, one of the people's favorite holiday films, because I wanted to like knock out a bunch of film clubs. So by the way, welcome to Film Club, where we talk about film.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, Film Club. And you shot back, said It's a Wonderful Life. And I was like, both, like my heart leaped a little because I feel like it's only a film for old people like myself. Or and to know that people younger than me like the film, because it is not just one of my favorite Christmas movies. It is possibly my favorite movie of all.
Yes.
It even begs the question, like it's a Christmas, people will question, hey, Die Hard's a Christmas movie. Is it a Christmas movie? It takes place on Christmas. This is a Christmas movie. It doesn't even really talk about Christmas.
Zero.
Like, hardly at all. Like, yeah. It's barely mentioned. It just happens to take place. Part of
there's
it.
Snow.
There's snow. Is that a holiday thing? There's a tree. Actually, it's past Christmas. Isn't it New Year's Eve?
Literally, I think it is New Year's at the very final scene where they just still have the Christmas tree up.
But the day, yeah, which is proper. You should.
Yeah, don't take it
until New Year's Eve, the New Year's Day. You dispose of it on January 2nd, and if you miss that date, you wait until Easter.
Amen.
That's
so it dries out, and you can throw it in your own fireplace. That's the other option.
Yeah.
What my favorite film, and folks, if you haven't, I mean, most people have heard of It's a Wonderful Life. Real quick, it's directed by Frank Capra, screenplay by Francis Goodrick, Albert Hackett, Frank Capra, additional scenes by Joe Swerling. So I guess somebody was like, you know what, there's a few scenes, one scene sucks, but we're going to give it to Joe. Starring James Stewart and Donna Reed. They're the big names in it that lived on. It's a 1946 American Christmas supernatural drama film, Wikipedia calls it. I've never heard it called a supernatural film, but it's a Christmas supernatural drama film. It's based on a short story and booklet, The Greatest Gift, self-published.
It was
by Philip Van Doren Stern. So all you self-publishers out there, you have hope.
It literally started as a greeting card. He sent out 200 to
really?
His family, and one screenwriter read it and got his hands on it. It was like, this will make a fantastic film. And that's how it became. It's Frank, what was his last name, the director?
Capra.
Frank Capra funded it solely. It's one of his, I think he only had two or three movies, but it was his passion. He loved it, and he put his life into this movie.
So the plot, George Bailey has so many problems. He is thinking about ending it all, and it's Christmas. Okay, it's Christmas. As the angels discuss George, we see his life in flashback. As George is about to jump from the bridge, he ends up rescuing his guardian angel, Clarence, who then shows George what his town would have looked like if it hadn't been for all his good deeds over the years. Wikipedia wanted to say that it was also like loosely based on A Christmas Carol. I don't know, a little bit maybe.
So actually that's my one note, is that is the best telling of A Christmas Carol style.
Do you think it is? Just because he goes back?
Yeah, not in the I'm wealthy and I can make an impact sense, but in what does the soul of a man mean? What impact do we have when we don't have the money? When we can't give our friends everything they need? When we're just there, it's so easy to devalue that and be like, I've done nothing for these people. But the movie really shows the impact of just being there for your community and people. And that's... it warms my heart.
Yes, I love that. I love that part. It has, I think, the best scene in cinema history.
Oh, I'm so best, which one? Because there are so many great
ones. The scene that they, him and his wife, well, future wife, what's her name?
Donna something.
No, Donna's the real life.
Oh, well, in the movie, yeah, I don't
wait.
Yeah, please find it, because I want to know.
No, now I'm going to die if I don't. George, Mary.
Of course, Mary.
So the scene that he is on the phone, him and Mary are at the phone, and they're talking about plastics to it, and the guy's trying to sign him up, and he's like, "And you got to take a chance. Come on, George, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity." And they're staring at each other, and there's this whole unscripted, unworded monologue happening between the two about all their entire relationship is being kind of discussed, with them looking at each other. And then he throws the phone down, like, "I don't want a plastics. I don't want to fall in love, and I don't want to have kids." You know, like, Mary.
And that kiss is like, it's one of my favorite kisses in cinema. And it's such a shitty kiss. He like rubs his face on her.
He's got a rash from it.
It's so intimate, but it shows
that scene so much.
Yeah,
it's my favorite scene.
The decision point of his life, where he's like, "I could abandon what my father stood for, what the loan and bank stands for, and go and be a successful person in the world, or I can really follow that heart and be with this woman who I have this uncontrollable love for. Like, she's holding me back." But it's what it is all about, you know.
She's a little young for him, though.
Little, it's problematic.
I mean, at least she's after college, right? Yeah. This is after college. We want that other scene when he goes there and he's like at the dance. He's at the dance with her. At the high school dance. Like, and everyone's fine with it. Everyone's like, oh, sure, a 28-year-old man should be hanging out at the dance with this girl.
Oh, it's just George Bailey.
He has sex with all the high schooler.
He cuts in and bumps out Alfalfa, the same character who plays Alfalfa.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's the same actor who gets pushed aside so he can dance with Mary for the contest.
So Alfalfa presses the button?
Yeah, Alfalfa's the one
who opened up the pool. The other love scene is the Buffalo Bill, won't you come out tonight, dancing around the bush and hiding in there. Buffalo Girls.
And the house with the wishes.
Yeah. Badly edited, by the way. Like abrupt cuts that are like, well, jarring. Like, boy, the editor didn't have a smooth transition point in this.
Where was the third camera? Where was the third camera in 1940, whatever?
And what I think is amazing about this, there's so many like there are flaws to the editing and the even cinematography and weird special effects of, but it stands up.
I think the most important part is they really emphasize the emotion. The scene that I think about that has like one of the more jarring effects on me is he's praying in Nick's bar maybe. And he's literally losing it and just praying, and it zooms in on his face, but it gets grainier because they didn't zoom in with the camera. They zoomed in post. And it just blew up an old.
There are times he does look absolutely insane. Well,
oh, it's like all.
He's like, oh my gosh, people, I'm gonna go to jail.
That's what you would think, right? That's how you would act if you lost, I mean, what is $8,000 in 2020?
Well, it's crazy. He didn't even lose it. Like, I don't think he was only, but crazy to me is he was only going to jail because he knew he was not going to let someone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Because he could just be like, this fucking idiot who can't find his
with the ring.
He can't find anything. He's a string. Yeah. He lost the money. And I don't lose the money.
If you looked at his house, when they showed his house, he had like a raccoon, he had crows, he had all these wilderness animals. Clearly, let your uncle go to the penitentiary.
Okay? Right. I don't still get like why they were like, well, I'm going to give it up because I got to, because I'm George Bailey. So yeah. I'm going to go to jail. Like, what trust in the criminal justice system, too, that they're going to. You don't think no one's going to ask you, do you have an idea what happened? And he's going to go, well, yeah, he lost it, but I should go to jail still.
I'm responsible.
Like, what? What the hell is he afraid of?
But that's the character, man. That's George Bailey. That's him refusing to deliver poison to the kid in the opening in one of those opening scenes. Because he
can't. You're upset, man. It was a poison. You have people poison in it.
Another insane
thing. How did you know it was poison?
That part.
Who sells poison with giant bottles?
Why did the pharmacists have poison in capsule form?
I was like, I know drugstores carried a lot of stuff, ice cream, milk, and then they had rat poison right next to penicillin.
In capsule form.
Just capsule form.
They put it in capsules for human to swallow.
I think he did cut it into it, but
well, so the thing is that that scene, the pharmacist was actually drunk, and the blood coming out of his ear was real blood because he slapped the kid actor so hard.
Hard,
yeah, that it genuinely started bleeding, and he just
the laws,
dude. Yeah, 1940s were raw,
and it's like. This is how you act, kid. This ain't acting.
Why is he drunk on set?
Wait, he was really drunk on set?
He was really drunk, yeah.
Oh, so he was like, he was a method acting motherfucker?
In the fucking role, man. His son died of what, influenza or what? The Spanish
flu? Yeah.
Because I think it was 1919 when he got that letter.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think like all of the first act of the movie is George Bailey's life. And I think that's what we're missing in other Christmas Carol tales is why do we care about Ebenezer Scrooge? I don't, you know, when you actually like the lore of Scrooge.
Well,
But I mean,
yeah, you have to go back to see that he was sympathetic at one point.
Exactly. And the, at the start, you don't care. You're like, this old croon, why is he getting a second chance? You know, you're not on Scrooge's side. But with George Bailey, you're like, he did. He tried to be the what an upstanding man should be. You know, he lived true to his spirit and what his father, I guess, because he really references his dad a lot because he took over the building alone.
Yeah.
But he really stresses that I'm living this authentic life and being right. And Mr. Potter, being the greedy capitalist, really showing you that other side of like money and profit and, you know, put them in the slums. Who cares? You know, as long as they're paying their rent each month. That's the important part.
Right.
And he just was like, no, these are my people. These are my neighbors. These are my friends. I'm going to help to get them in a house if I can. And, you know, showing getting into Martinez's house with his 13 kids and a goat or
whatever. Yeah.
Was so.
By the way, okay, people know on the channel that I'm a real estate agent in real life. But what's funny is when I became a real estate agent, I thought I was going to be super original. And I was like, well, my favorite movie, It's a Wonderful Life. So when people's house closed, I got them a bottle of wine, a big thing of salt, and some bread, and I would say the same thing to them. And I was thought I was clever. And I was on like a network meeting with other agents, and they're like, yeah, everybody's done that. It's a pretty common gift. I was like, what? For real?
I thought I was the first.
But I thought I was the only one who saw the famous movie.
It's only been 70 years at this point.
Okay, I guess I'll get someone else. I'll get them a home warranty or something.
Yeah, right. We just replace it with like Walmart goods and and a little insurance.
I always liked it. Now I give people soy sauce.
There you go.
Expensive soy sauce. And by the way, anyone listening, expensive soy sauce will change your life. When you taste soy sauce that costs $30, you have understood what the nectar of the gods is in with a sodium product. Okay. It's a mild flavor and it's so tasty. Okay. That's my, I can't go too far.
I'm married to a Korean gal, and the life before, like authentic Asian food, and her mom sending us home with bulgogi.
And now you're like, this is a wonderful life. I mean, this is.
That's all I was missing, man. It was a Korean in-law.
Mary.
Man,
was Mary insane? Like, why do you. She could have had anybody. Like, she waited for this college guy. Why, she wants to stay at home. Like, she doesn't want to do anything. Like, is
college.
That if George Bailey didn't exist, she would have became a librarian?
Well, I don't know.
Is that just male? Is that a male gaze? Is that the male fantasy? That do you think that's actually her life, that no man could have pleased her?
I feel like it was a 1950s life. Was like this, like, If you're not going to fall in love with the man you love, then you're just going to become an old hag. Like, you'll never find love.
Don't see Mary. No, what happened to her? Is she crippled? No, worse. She's an old maid. I was like, oh my God, what happened to her? The first time I saw it, like, I was like.
I had a hot college boyfriend who was blowing up in the plastics industry. Why did she return without George Bailey? If there's no George Bailey, does she come back to whatever? Not Potterville, but...
Well, she comes and becomes a librarian?
Yeah.
In what? Potterville?
In Potterville. The one with all the strip clubs next door.
And the guy claims... then a crazy guy comes in and says, I'm your husband. And she's like... She freaks out. She's going to die. What a crazy madman. I, of course, would never be married. I'm the hot librarian. I'm waiting for a guy to come through here trying to sell trumpets.
In a Hallmark movie to show me the meaning of Christmas.
I don't know about her, like, life becoming... it's funny that becoming an old maid was the worst thing.
That
not getting married? Oh, my God. Like, why shouldn't you just kill herself?
No amputation, no addiction, just old and unmarried. Without
George Bailey, the easy girl just became a full on easy girl, huh? The other one, what was her name?
Oh yeah, what's her name? It's something Lou, right? I feel like it.
And I just love it that she's like a little strumpet from the moment she's like a kid. She's like, look at that George Bailey.
Hey man, 6 years old ordering
a milk. I'm going for that. Oh yeah, she had to. He was working there like at 14, right?
Yeah. Why was he? Child labor laws must have not been around because he was running that pharmacy at 12, 13.
So at best, what's the age difference between them?
I think only like 6 to 10 years.
Well, I'm just thinking like, well, wait, she was like flirt. She's like, I'm going to marry him.
Yeah.
She spent the rest of my life with this teenager. And she's like a 8-year-old, like getting a malt.
She was in her George Bailey's little brother's class, so I don't think they were too far separated because he was still going to high school parties, right?
Even four then. Four years.
Yeah. I mean, still too much.
Yeah.
But man, we're talking in the 50s, right? Like,
but basically his little his daughter playing the piano should already be playing in the love of her life.
Hey, man, Zuzu's whispering in the new mouth boy's ear. the beauty of like taking that old house and having their honeymoon in it, it embedded this meaning of regardless of scenario, regardless of how beautiful your house is or how successful you are, the love of that you share with somebody deeply meaningful will surpass every financial milestone I ever get to, you know?
Is this a film that you do think about?
I do. I watch it once a year. I don't watch it more than that. I watch it New Year's Eve after the world's gone to bed, about 10 p.m., 11 p.m.
Oh, New Year's. So it's like a New Year's Eve film.
Or Christmas Eve, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, and it reminds me of what I think the spirit of Christmas is really representing. I grew up pretty poor. I mean, not starving poor, but we made a lot of pancakes growing up, you know?
Yeah.
And it really taught me a lot, or like made me think a lot about, like I said, the impact. I feel like I can't always buy the nicest presents for my friends. I feel like I can't always provide financial, this is how much you mean to me, because I don't got that much, you know. But I do have my heart, and I do have that impact of telling the people who matter to me what they mean to me, for the fact that at least that's what I can give them, is a reminder that we're here and you've made my life better. And I think that that's really the Christmas attitude of the movie, is regardless of what you give, being there Christmas Day is the real impactful thing you can do. And it always flips my mood. I've been literally bankrupt, watched the movie, gone to a 24-hour, I think it was Walmart, and bought a bunch of $5 treats for my dogs to give my wife. She didn't expect it, but I wrapped them all and I gave her a present, and she was like, oh, it's Christmas morning. She had that moment. And that's meant more to me than any Christmas I've had in since adulthood, you know? Yeah. That's my Christmas in my mind. And it's just being there with the people you love and sharing. I can't do much, but this is what I can do.
No man is a failure who has friends.
Oh, what a line.
I think that is the big thing that stuck with me. Is I've tried to always think that that's true.
Yeah.
But I got friends, right? So hopefully, I always wonder, like, I mean, I can't help. I don't know if this is common amongst people, but I'm always like, so if I was going to go to jail, would they step up for me? Would someone go around and collect the dollars?
Yeah, where's the bail coming from? You know,
would my one token black friend who's like a maid show up and give me all the money in case she ever got a husband? I say this in case I ever got a husband. This is like one of the few films I could probably quote the whole thing.
Dude, what does he want, Mary? I do a terrible George Bailey accent, but I do it for my wife at least 4 or 5 times a year. And she's like, that is not how he sounds. You want the moon? I'll throw a lasso around it and bring it down here.
What? So when I first discovered the film, I thought it was so boring. The first time I watched it, I thought it was so boring. I probably didn't watch all of it.
To be honest, the first act, you work through that first act. It's not.
I don't think I watched it till college. Like that, I actually, and my grandpa played it. It was on all the time because they had TBS, and it was like 1986 ish that I first saw the movie existed. Mm-hmm. And back then was the big controversy of Ted Turner colorizing all these black and white films, and it was like It's a Wonderful Life now in color. Right? And so years, like I would see that the choice. And then like I knew when I bought it and I had the choice to when buying the film was like, because you can buy it in color.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I bought the black and white like a real man.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the black and white, I feel like, tells a more honest version?
Well, I think the problem is, well, part of it is, when things were shot in black and white, we know things were shot in, you shoot things in different angles and in different lighting and different things when you know it's going to be in black and white. You make choices. So I think as much as you even correct, I mean, because they do go and correct things and go like, well, they wouldn't have worn that color. Right. So they make it a different color than what they can figure out it was. But I just think that if they knew they could do it in color, the film would be shot differently.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think things just look a little off when they are put into color. Because you're like, oh, no, that's not how it was. That's meant to be shot.
Planned. Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, this is, I've argued about this all the time. Like, this is a beautiful film because I think films in their core have to like have a good story, and the acting has to be good. And and when you didn't have special effects and you didn't have the spectacle part of it, you had to have the story and the acting had to be there.
Yeah.
And so a film like this, it's all story. And it's all character and film. And so it's a great story. It's like when they remade Red Dawn, I always talk about that.
Uh-huh.
The remake of Red Dawn is god awful.
It's so bad.
Because they didn't have to worry. Because like, oh, we can just blow shit up. Let's just blow everything up. It'll be really cool. And I'm like, well, yeah. But back when they first made this, they didn't have much of a budget. So they had to be creative and you had to work on a good script because it wasn't just about things going boom, boom, and selling to the international audience.
You can't like show a clip show of Red Dawn, you know, like it's not good in the top 10 best scenes of Red Dawn.
No,
you
know? No,
it's really an experience of watching the whole movie and being with characters. You know?
It's a character development piece and it's not an action film. And then the remake tried to make it an action film. And that's just, that's not what it was.
There was a remake of It's a Wonderful Life that I think lost so much of it because...
It's a Wonderful Knife, the new one?
No.
There's a horror film that just came out called It's a Wonderful Knife.
Which is the same story with more murder.
I need to look... I'm not joking. I don't know what the plot is, but...
The plot, it's a silly horror.
There was a remake of It's a Wonderful Life?
No.
Yeah. It's like, I wouldn't be surprised.
But It's a Wonderful Life had those authentic moments. That kiss that you talked about, the prayer, these raw moments of just humanity. Just George Bailey coping with Clarence coming down and him being like, no, you're not an angel. Like the realism of every moment that led to George Bailey wanting to commit suicide to save his family. Again, he was weighing, this will give the money so nobody will suffer. Yeah. Versus what am I giving to the world? And he was like, I can't offer more than this $10,000 life insurance policy.
Yeah.
This is the important thing. This is what my life is worth. And like, I don't know. I know me, I've suffered with that moment of a life insurance looks better than what I'm bringing in. But the like reassurance that there's more. You're impacting more than you realize. Mm-hmm. Has just always sat so deep in my heart. And that's what makes this one of, I'd probably say top five. I don't know if it breaks the top three, but it's definitely one of my top five favorite films, period. It gives me something. I mean, even the poster, looking at it in your background, is, it just gives you some sort of hope. And
I don't even want my kids to watch this movie until they, like, I think they'll appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want you looking at it like it's like, oh, look at the old movie.
I watch it, like I said, after my wife goes to bed, after the world is asleep.
Yeah.
That's when I watch it, is because it's just me absorbing a reminder of what's important. And that's it speaks so much. I
also appreciate that it is a Christmas movie that does not make any reference to religion.
Well, the beginning is this.
Well, okay. The angels.
They have like the twinkling stars.
The angels, I guess.
Yeah.
On Christmas Eve, but he can't do that. Oh, doesn't he know? Does he know?
Joseph.
That would be a sin. Well, I mean, but most of the movie, it's not like, full of Jesus references. It's not. They barely mention Christmas in it. Like I said, it's just like a movie. It's just a movie. And I love that there's a Christmas movie that takes place there, but doesn't really talk about it. And the fact that Die Hard definitely mentions Christmas way more than It's a Wonderful Life does.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have a better time arguing that Die Hard's a Christmas movie, but It's a Wonderful Life encapsulates what I think we try to make Christmas represent. You know, not a single gift was opened. Not a single. I mean, I just watched Turbo Man, Jingle All the Way, where Arnold Schwarzenegger plays Turbo Man, and he's worried about getting his son the present. And that's like a major plot point. There's no present. He's not getting his wife. They live in a rusty shack that she broke the window of on their first kiss, you know?
Yeah.
But it's together we will build a life worth loving. And I just, every year it melts my heart. It's the only Christmas movie that genuinely puts me in a Christmas mood. Elf is good.
If only I had my own senior in high school that was caught in a bush without any clothes on, and I was
completely nude.
This is your mother, she'd be on my side, actually.
What a predicament to find myself in. Not every day a fella finds himself in this sort of situation, don't you?
I do say, like, movies like that also, in the negative, I talk about, like, movies like this that had full-grown adults in their 30s playing high school people definitely also made my sense of what a high school girl should look like really skewed.
Yeah, yeah, the like idea of maturity almost.
I just can't even, like, now I'm almost 50 here, and I'm like, high school girls, they might as well be in elementary school. They look the same to me.
And then you got
this 30-year-old woman playing.
Yeah, I have a high school bus that picks out outside my apartment complex that I pass every day. And I have to remind myself that they're high schoolers because they're trying to be high schoolers, and I see that, but they're children.
Yeah. They're
just wee babes.
And I'm like, oh, she's in high school. Okay, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
It's definitely jarring through the lens of modern day. But I remember that my grandparents are almost 10 years apart, married young. And I'm like, okay, maybe it was just the 50s.
If my grandma was inappropriate, so it was,
grandma was gaslit into the fridge, but it was worth it because I'm here now.
I am 11 years old senior to my wife, but I did not meet her till she was after college. So,
yeah,
it's okay. That's what I tell myself and tell the courts and the judge, everybody. I think it was okay. Hey, Nick, I want to thank you for coming by for Fight Club. This is great to chat about this movie. I'm going to run the trailer for the movie when we are done here, so people can check that out and hopefully inspire them to go watch It's a Wonderful Life. It's available everywhere you stream. You can buy it on DVD, whatever. I recommend the black and white version. Don't go for the color. Don't do it.
It's better.
And I hope people can appreciate why it is one of my favorite films besides my favorite Christmas.
Yeah, if you make it this far, please do yourself the favor of watching the movie. It really doesn't matter what you go in with expectation-wise. If you genuinely give it your attention, you're going to get something back.
Yeah.
Before we completely wrap up, the line when he's pleading with Mr. Potter, he's like, "Potter, $5,000. Do you know how long it takes the working man to save that long?" Hasn't aged.
Has not aged.
70 years later, God. It still takes more than a year to save $5,000.
Yeah.
And that's not a down payment anymore. So.
No, it is not. It's a film as relevant today as it was back then.
Yeah, still, yeah, exactly. Nothing's still changed.
$5,000 away. Right.
Well, thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you for recommending this film, and thank you for watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters. You find this, so go on and press play and rewind this. This speech it is timeless. Love it like it, or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference. Love them. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters. You find this, so go on and press play and rewind this. This shit is timeless. Love it like it, or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas. Yeah.